relevant experts are you reading?
2 Samuel 16, 1-4. When David had passed a little beyond the summit, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him, with a couple of donkeys saddled, carrying 200 loaves of bread, 100 bunches of raisins, 100 of summer fruits, and 1 skin of wine. The king said to Ziba, "Why have you brought these?" Ziba answered, "The donkeys are for the king's household to ride, the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine is for those to drink who faint in the wilderness." The king said, "And where is your master's son?" Ziba said to the king, "He remains in Jerusalem, for he said, 'Today the house of Israel will give me back my grandfather's kingdom.'" Then the king said to Ziba, "All that belonged to Mephibosheth is now yours." Ziba said, "I do obeisance. Let me find favor in your sight, my lord the king." 2 Samuel 19, 24-30. Mephibosheth's grandson of Saul came down to meet the king. He had not taken care of his feet, or trimmed his beard, or washed his clothes, from the day the king left until the day he came back in safety. When he came from Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" He answered, "My lord, O king, my servant deceived me. Your servant said to him, 'Saddle a donkey for me, so that I may ride it and go with the king, for the servant is lame.' He has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Do therefore what seems good to you. For all my father's house were doomed to death before my lord the king, but you set your servant among those who eat at your table. What further right have I than to appeal to the king?" The king said to him, "Why speak any more of your affairs? I decided. You and Ziba shall divide the land." Mephibosheth said to the king, "Let him take it all, since my lord the king has arrived home safely."
We sat in the hospital room, exhausted. The baby had come. Baby Irie was in our midst, and we could hold her and kiss her. And the nurses came in, one after another, doing all the tests. They taught us some things. They taught us how to give this baby a bath. They taught Stacy how to nourish this baby. They taught us what we would need to do to get her on a sleep schedule. They were very helpful. But they left one thing out, one important thing, our third lesson of the week. They left out this small little thing that all future parents need to know. There is this thing that nurses refer to as a BM, bowel movement. They also refer to it as a stool. Good people, brothers and sisters, let me let you know, this is not a BM or a stool. In the first weeks of your baby's life, your beautiful baby, there will be this thing that I have called a TTP. That's a terrible tar poo. This oozing black substance that smells like a marinating porta potty on a hot summer day will come from this precious little baby that you have just came from the womb. Beware of the TTPs. And please, correct the medical professionals in our midst. TTPs is the correct phrasing for this. We were finally ready to take that baby girl home. They checked us out. I pulled our Honda up to right next to the hospital doors, and I walked with Stacy, and a nurse had in the car stroller baby Irie. I helped Stacy in the car. We secured the little baby seat. You even have to get checked on your baby seats now. Did you know this? And as I get in the car, I put my hand on the handle grips, and there's this sense of this is different. I'd gotten in that Honda 100 times before, and as I squeezed those grips, I looked behind me just to make sure no one was coming. I looked behind me another time. I never do this. I looked behind me a third time because the weight of this was on my shoulders. I was now called to lead. Stacy and I were now called to lead, to nurture, to dream with, to invest in this baby girl, to help her to know that every day of her life, she is the beloved. And as I drove away, I felt the weight of the call to leadership, the weight that we all experience. Over the last 24 hours of baby Irie's birth, we went from the depth of lostness, pain, and despair to feeling located, beloved, to all of a sudden feeling the call to lead. We all experience this movement in our life. It's not easy, and it comes over and over again, but we need to embrace the lostness, learning from it, meeting the God of abundant life and love in that place, allowing God to move us to the place of being located, and lastly, to being leaders in the world, leaders who lead as wounded leaders to our world. And so, there's a picture of her right there. Oh, yeah. And so we left Mephibosheth at the banqueting table of the king. He's feasting with David's mighty men. He has been found. This crippled boy who lived in Lodabar, who was exiled out of the kingdom, was now found. We were in chapter 9 last night, but we move forward from chapter 9 to chapter 16. David makes a mess. Adultery with Bathsheba, crisis with his sons, poor fatherhood over and over again. He is in the midst of a spiritual crisis. And so in chapter 16, he actually has to leave Jerusalem because his son is trying to usurp the throne. He's taking over the throne. So David leaves Jerusalem, and Ziba, that servant of Mephibosheth, he meets David out on the hill, and he brings him a whole bunch of gifts. And of course, King David says, "Where's Mephibosheth? Where's the one that I put at the king's table? The one that I said, no longer will your name be shamed, but it will be the honorable one." Ziba says, "He didn't come. He thinks that the kingdom of Saul is going to be put back into power." Now, remember what we learned about ancient warfare. Anyone who had a right to the throne was killed, except for Mephibosheth. So Ziba is suspect here, right? He brings gifts. He tells the king. And so the king makes a declaration. All of that land that I gave Mephibosheth, it's yours. And you can hear in those pages the brokenheartedness of a king who's in crisis. And we don't hear from Mephibosheth. We don't hear his side of the story until chapter 19. King David is riding back into Jerusalem. A new day has dawned. His son is backed off, and he gets to remain as the king of all of Israel. And on his way back, the picture the Bible gives us says Mephibosheth, he hasn't shaved. He hasn't washed his face or his clothes. He hasn't cared for his feet, and he's hobbling on those crooked legs, one hobble at a time. King David comes in off of a horse and says, "Where were you, Mephibosheth? I set you at my table. I treated you as a son. Where were you in my time of crisis?" Mephibosheth says, "I was tricked. I was deceived by Ziba." And so King David immediately reacts and says, "Okay, fine. You can have half the land back and it'll be fine." Mephibosheth responds in this way, "For all my father's house were doomed to death before my lord the king, but you set your servant among those who eat at your table. What further right have I then to appeal to the king?" And at this point, Mephibosheth tells the king, "I don't want the land. It's not about the land." Now, you need to know the risk that he was taking. He took a risk to hobble down and to meet the king. He took a step of leadership. He took a step of leadership to mourn and to grieve for what was happening in Israel. And then he takes another courageous step of leadership. He says, "Let Ziba have it all, since my lord the king has arrived home safely." Now, for a crippled man that has no hope of getting the economic needs that he needs, this is huge. He says, "My place is at your table, the king. My place is with you. I'm trusting in your kingdom. I'm trusting in what God is doing through you. I don't care about money. I don't care about the risks. I am taking a step of Christian leadership." Mephibosheth has experienced what it means to be lost, to be located, and to take a courageous step of leadership. Katie Flansburg, she shows me this wall of crosses at St. Andrew United Methodist Church. She shares with me that each cross is a teenager, a young adult within the church. And each cross, that teenager is going through confirmation, is learning the basics of what it means to be a Christian, of what it means to be a disciple on the way, and live the way of Jesus. She shares with me that each cross represents a teenager. Each teenager was given the cross from a caring adult, an adult who stepped across the line to lead. That caring adult is praying, is supporting, is encouraging, is listening to this teenager through the confirmation process. Then she took the cross that she gave to a young girl off the wall, and she held it like this. And she told me about the coffee she'd had with that girl, about the conversations, about her hopes and dreams for all that that girl can become. Katie Flansburg has decided that she would go to seminary, that she would learn everything she could to be the best youth director, youth pastor that she could be. She has a passion for listening to teenagers. She feels especially equipped to help young women deal with eating disorders and depression and anxiety. Katie Flansburg took a risk. She took a step of faith to become a leader in the church. She went from being lost to located to leading. She told me this: I like to tell people, ask me anything from Jesus to drugs, and I'll be completely honest with you. Hassan Latif, the snow is falling in Denver. There's ice on the streets and the sidewalks. The temperature is dropping. They come. Even though there's rumors that the nonprofit he runs, Turnabout, is losing funding. They come from the halfway houses. They come from the park benches. They come from the rescue mission. Ex-cons come. They gather together on Saturday morning, no matter what the weather is, no matter what the rumors are. They need each other. They need the love and the support, the hugs and the handshakes that can get them through the next week. Because as Hassan will tell you, the statistics of a convict going back to prison are incredibly high. So Hassan greets everyone as they come to the door. His eyes stare them down. But these eyes are filled with compassion and care, filled with the sense that these people matter. No one is a nobody to Hassan. He knows their names. He knows their stories. He encourages them through their ups and downs with substance abuse. He plugs them into programs. He gets them meal cards and houses, apartments where they can find a sense of value and worth. Hassan Latif is a free man. He's a new man. He's been out of prison for over 10 years. He's been free of drugs and alcohol for 20 years. He doesn't tell these cons what to believe or how to act. He looks in their eyes and he tells them they are worthy. He empowers them to be their very best. He brings out the image of God within them. The sun is just coming up in Denver, Colorado. Rachel gets in her car. She begins to drive to Thomas Jefferson High School, where she's a social studies teacher. She whispers a prayer for the students that she'll see throughout the day. Thomas Jefferson High School is the most racially diverse high school in Denver, Colorado. It's the lowest income high school. She chooses to work there because she can make a difference. She doesn't care really about social studies and facts. She cares about their life. She cares about them outside of the classroom. So she prays and she shows up day after day to tell these young people that they matter. She has gone from being lost to located to leading in our community. Jason Stutzman drops Natalie and Kate off at school. He drives his pickup truck to a client's house. Jason works for a nonprofit that builds ramps for handicapped and elderly people. There's one particular story he told me about a woman who they just couldn't get the funding because of the grant restrictions and limitations, but he worked at it. He finally found her the funding. She lived in a trailer home, and she rarely got out of the house. Jason had just finished the ramp. He went by just to do some finishing touches, and before he could get out of the truck, she had her motorized wheelchair halfway down that ramp. Anna is her name. And she yelled, Jason, guess what? And Jason said, what, Anna? Yesterday, I went to the grocery store and I bought my groceries for the first time in 5 years. The simple privileges that we take for granted. This woman had not been able to buy her own bread for 5 years. And now, because of the leadership of building a simple ramp, she could experience buying her own groceries. Jason and Rachel Stutzman. So what's your story? Where are you called to serve? What is that still small voice of God saying to you? Where do you see God? In the lostness, in the locatedness, and where is God moving your feet to action? When I think about these stories, there's these four like lessons that I feel like we learn from them. And they don't come, they're not just, they're not just one, two, three. They're not systematic. They're not easy to learn, but they seem to come at us. And they seem to be these ways that God works among our life. The first one is that God makes palaces out of pits and potholes. The very place of the deepest pain, God is the one who transforms, calling us back to serve from that place of pain and vulnerability. The second one is God makes convictions out of our questions. This is spiritual formation. Remember those courageous words on a cross? My God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus asks a courageous question. And out of that question, a conviction on the third day comes. The death had to happen so that millions and millions of people in the northern and southern hemisphere would have new life, would have the possibility of being found, being called the beloved. A conviction wells up. The resurrection and the death of Jesus has a purpose. God makes homecoming out of hopelessness. The Eucharist, through the Eucharist, God is feeding us. God is sustaining us for our journey. Those places of hopelessness, God seems to wrap his arms around us and bring us home. You are home in God's love. You are home in the church. You are given worth and dignity in this place, a voice, gifts to serve the world with. And lastly, when you think about all four of our stories, there's this sense that our stories are not finished. Our stories are open-ended, waiting for the God of love to move us to new places. God makes open hands out of the clenched fists. This journey is ongoing, open-ended. So we all need to have a sense of humility, a sense that we are leading at the most exciting times, leading to an unknown future. It all began with a small group of people. This small group of people shared a dream. They believed that at this time in history, at this moment, that dormant soil had become rich with nutrients. They believed that the world was about to bloom. Walls were crumbling. Bridges were being built. Love was being shared. God's reign had come. God's new world was becoming possible. Just as the rabbi had promised, a new energy surged from within me, from within them. They prayed together, they praised together, they served together, they sacrificed together. The witness of the early Christians compels us. But there's more work to do. There's more love to share. There's more walls and bridges and doors that need attention. So the question becomes, will you continue the movement? Will you allow their story to become your story? Will you trust this incredible God of love like the Stutzman family, like Katie Flansburg, like Mephibosheth, and like Hassan Latif to lead you onward? The taking of the step comes with a promise. I will never leave or forsake you. I will be with you to the very end of the age. Brothers and sisters, as you lead, God says to you, do not be afraid. Do not fear.